Hey, everybody, and welcome back. Happy New Year's to another edition to Our Voice 360, Our Perspectives, Our Ways. I'm your man, one half of the duo here, Chad Bumgarner, and I have with me my man, Pete Hunt.
What's good, family? Glad to be back.
Indeed, indeed, my brother. And with that, let's go ahead and, hey, let's get into it.
And as always, Chad and people, viewers and listeners, our show is brought to you by CDB Consulting. Great leadership equals great results. How are you leading?
And also, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, it is a new year, a new season. So, but as always, if there's something you want us to talk about, something you want to hear our perspectives on or anything of the sort, let us know how we're doing or what you think we can do better. Please do not hesitate to contact us at our email address at ourvoice360@gmail.com. That's ourvoice360@gmail.com. Now, before we get into it, let's go ahead and run it down real quick, Pete. So just off rip, we're going to cover a couple topics today. All right. Right. First, starting off with the Ahmaud Arbery case, the after effects of it, or the results, if you will. We're going to touch on that and some of the things that have happened since then. And also we're going to touch on the voters' rights issue and how Biden is handling that, or lack thereof of handling that. So, all right, Pete, with those are our topics today. So let's just jump right in, man. First of all, let's jump into the Ahmaud Arbery case. Now, we know that the three men that were tried for murder for Ahmaud Arbery were found guilty. All three were convicted and given life sentences. The son and father, if I'm not mistaken, got life without parole.
Right.
And then the gentleman who filmed it got life with parole. Is that right?
Right. Yeah. Something to that effect. Yeah.
Okay. So in all aspects, me personally, I kind of feel like justice was served. I know it was a shock to the convicted because that was such a small town and they were well connected, with the authority, so to speak. I know. Mm-hmm. At one point in time, the son or someone in their family worked for the DA. And, if you remember that when this whole thing happened, the case kept getting delayed because as they researched and found out, his son used to work for the DA at one point in time. So they had to find another DA. And it was some more things that were going on. They were pretty connected because it was such a small town. But once they got all of that sorted out and was able to have a fair trial.
Mm-hmm.
To me, this turned out to be a fair and just trial. And I think that the verdict was called correctly. And, justice was served in this situation, for our people. Now, I know it will never, bring back Ahmaud to his family and all that stuff. But I do feel like. If I could be so bold to speak on their behalf, that they feel some kind of closure.
Right. Exactly.
And justice to a certain extent. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? So prayers still go out to the family for healing trying to be able to keeping on and keep living and moving. But I'm pretty sure that there'll be some kind of organization, foundation, if not already, in Ahmaud's name to, keep him alive, or his memory, that is, alive, and to also, put people on notice in that area that, hey, it's a new day. You can't just do something to people of color and get away with, to black people specifically, and just think you're going to get away with it. It's a new day.
Mm-hmm.
It is a new day.
Yeah, Chad, and so go back to what you were mentioning earlier about the original DA, she was charged and tried for the mishandling of the Arbery case.
Yeah.
And it was, I think it was a couple more people that were actually indicted, with their mishandling of it. So like you said earlier, with this being such a small community, those type of things happen, where people will try to cover up for their buddies and their friends and this, that, and the third. And I mean, this trial was just a really hard look into unethical treatment and unethical practices in law enforcement.
Right.
Whether it be the police department or whether it be the district attorney's office or whatever the case may be, to cover up so many things and so many things that police do and citizens that know people in those circles, well, what Pete, they will do. Yeah, they will do to cover up. But it's happening. It's been going on forever.
But we know that system as the good old boy network.
Of course. Of course.
What you just described is in its simplistic form is the good old boy network.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what the convicted were counting on.
Right.
When this situation happened, they were counting on that. What they mm-hmm. didn't count on was this case going national and bringing national exposure and attention to the situation. Once that rug was pulled back and the spotlight was shown, then they knew they were in some turmoil.
Mm-hmm. And you knew as and I know those the murderers now that we can call them.
Convicted murderers.
Yeah, exactly. We can call them that now. I know they were really stunned. I don't know if you saw this or not, Chad, when the judge came in to the court proceedings. He had a 1 minute moment of silence.
Yes, yes, I saw that. Yeah.
And basically was like, you know, this is the minute that Ahmaud Arbery was under. You know what I'm saying? This is, you know, we're going to give him his due as far as, you know. And that pretty much set the table of what was going to happen afterwards as far as the sentencing was concerned. Once he did that, I was like, this is not going to be good for y'all.
Right.
So, again, Chad, like you said, I mean, justice was served. I mean, this was a slam dunk. This was easy.
To add to your point with the judge.
Yeah.
When he was before he gave his sentencing, I guess.
Yeah.
And he was talking about the mistreatment of Ahmaud, how they, when they did shoot him and kill him, how they turned their back on him.
Mm-hmm.
And they didn't even, you know, try to render aid of any kind.
Mm-hmm.
And then now you say, now you want to have remorse.
Mm-hmm.
But you had no remorse for this man when he was laid out in the street, lifeless.
Right. Exactly. I mean, that judge laid everything out in a very, very professional manner and just broke down everything that happened in the case. And and as a black man, it was just good to see that a judge.
It was refreshing to see.
Yeah. That, I mean, you know.
A non-black judge really see it from the eyes of black folks.
Yeah, and hold those people accountable.
Thank you, Pete, and hold them accountable. Right. That's all we're asking for. Because you have no problem holding us accountable for much less.
Exactly.
Much, much less. Mm-hmm. There are still brothers and sisters locked up now with 20 plus year sentences from years ago for marijuana.
Right. Mm-hmm. And now marijuana is a $1 billion business.
Yes, and they still locked up.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
But as far as the case with Ahmaud, yes, justice was served. And now you were saying that there's some more case.
Federal hate crimes.
Thank you. Yes.
They have they still have.
So this wasn't included in the trial.
Oh, no. That was, you know, state. That was a state trial. Mm-hmm. Now they're going into here pretty soon. They're going to go into their federal hate crime trial, which will possibly add even more years to a life sentence. Mm. I mean, so.
And a life sentence generally is what? Was it 20 years?
No, a life sentence is life.
I thought life equaled like 20 or 25 years. I thought that was the same thing. Okay, my bad. I'm not.
Oh, yeah,
okay,
yeah.
So life is life. Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
So. Yeah, like the movie.
Live.
Time is slipping away from me. Yeah. That's what Casey said.
He did.
And look, on my bad. And JoJo. My fault. JoJo's in there too. But it's so now.
Okay.
Yeah. So now here soon, they'll be facing their federal hate crime charges, which looks like, you know, just like with this trial, it looks like a slam dunk, and I'm sure more years will be added to their sentences. Mm-hmm. So yeah, so they're going to spend a long time in prison.
And see, this sets the stage for, it's like a warning shot.
Mm-hmm.
This is a warning shot, especially in the South. It's right. A new day.
Mm-hmm.
This is not Jim Crow, even though Jim Crow still exists in certain forms and fashion, but
mm-hmm.
it's a new day now. Because now you even seeing non-black folks, let me say that, that mm-hmm. are really like sick of this.
Mm-hmm.
Because now it's like Will Smith said back in the day, it's not that this is new, it's just being recorded, it's being filmed
right.
now.
Right.
Now you come home and sit on your couch and have dinner, and you get to witness
mm-hmm.
what's been talked about for years, but right. we just didn't have the physical proof, aka film or document mm-hmm. or video
mm-hmm.
to show you. Now we have video to show you what's been going on.
Oh yeah.
But now as you eat your dinner, you get to, it's sad to say this, but now as you eat your dinner in the comfort of your home, you get to witness a murder.
Mm-hmm.
Of an unarmed black person on mm-hmm. several occasions.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah.
And so that feeds into the conscious mind of anybody who's human.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? Right. It's like just to pivot for a second, it's like when Martin Luther King and the black folks down in Selma, Alabama, when they were marching across the Edmund Pettus Bridge or Pettus Edmund Bridge, I can't remember mm-hmm. which way it goes. But they wanted the media there. He said, because it's different when people see
mm-hmm.
what's going on as opposed to reading it in the news. Because I can read it in the newspaper while I'm eating my cereal in the morning or drinking my coffee. Like, oh, that's so sad.
Mm-hmm.
But to sit there in the evening and watch on TV.
Right.
People who are unarmed, who are just walking over a bridge,
mm-hmm.
being beaten, shot. Dogs sicked on, water hose, you know,
mm-hmm. right.
spout at, to innocent people who are unarmed walking across a bridge. And this is what you do? Mm-hmm. See, that plays on the mind. It's like, oh my right. gosh. You know what I'm saying? It's one thing to read it, like I said. It's another thing for visual.
Mm-hmm.
And so that was the biggest moment in civil rights history, because people in the West and in the North and Northeast, whatever, they get to see it for the first time.
Mm-hmm.
This is no longer a tale.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying?
Right.
This is live TV.
Right. Mm-hmm.
These people are being beaten, shot, stabbed, dogs sicked on, the whole nine.
Right.
They have no weapons. All they got is prayer. That's it. As mm-hmm. they cross the bridge, locked in arms. And these police right. officers are just... Anyway, I just say that to say it's a new day.
Mm-hmm.
It's a new day, and now that people are able to see it, non-black folks are getting sick and tired of it, especially the younger generation.
Right.
They're sick mm-hmm. and tired of this racism. They're sick and tired of this unequalness, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
They just want to get along. They just want to get along.
Right.
A lot of them, not all, but a lot of them, they just want to mm-hmm. get along.
Mm-hmm.
And so, like I said, it's a warning shot. It's a new day, and yeah. I think this has got a lot of Jim Crow folks, you know, really second guessing what they think they want to do or what they may try to plan to do in the near future. I think this is giving them second thoughts now.
I certainly hope so. I hope, you know, with Ahmaud Arbery and George Floyd, and I hope these cases are finally, like you said, showing a light on just injustice
mm-hmm.
and how as a people, how we are treated by police and other powerful entities in this world. I mean, you know what I'm saying? It's not a fair fight at all.
Never
it's
has been.
It's not a fair fight. So it's good to see these cases and these people that do these atrocities, they're held accountable for the things that they've done.
And I also like the fact, Pete, that excuse me, it didn't stop there.
Mm-hmm.
I read NBC News was talking about a Georgia deputy faces firing, being fired over Facebook comments about Ahmaud Arbery. I think he was the one that said, well, Ahmaud still got the death penalty, so justice was served. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
Maybe not the verbatim, but that's in the gist what he supposedly said. Mm-hmm. And then there's another a deputy in Houston to be fired after posting offensive comments about Arbery.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not just here in Georgia where I am. It's all over. I mean, people are taking this thing serious. Like, yo, we are not going to have this anymore. It's we're not having it. We're not.
But again, as we've talked on many, many podcasts before, this is the mindset of a lot of your police officers.
That's true.
In this country. Mm-hmm. That is their mindset when it comes to Black people. So how do Black people navigate when it comes to dealing with cops? Because you don't know what kind of cop you're dealing with.
Well, I think
when you get pulled over or something happens, you don't know what kind of cop you're going to be getting. So again, with the things that were posted by these two gentlemen, these officers, again, shows you what Black folk have to deal with on a daily basis, especially with the police.
Well, Pete, don't run me up off this podcast, but I think I think the police departments across the country have to do or revamp their psyche vow when they're employing people, period. I don't think it's thorough enough. Background checks, I don't think they're thorough enough. The FBI, you know, they were kind of arrogant to not believe that these white supremacists could infiltrate, you know, police departments and other various. But now they see that they've infiltrated just about everywhere. And I'm like, this should not be rocket science.
That this is not about arrogance, because those the CIA, FBI, they know, because they have them in their own ranks. We got to remember how the police were formed.
Yeah.
The police were formed through slave patrols. Mm-hmm. Slave patrols turned into modern day policing.
Mm-hmm.
So seeing these racist and bigoted people in the police force is no shock, because it started. That's how it started. That's how policing started, in racism and bigotry. So it's not going to change now in 2022.
Mm-hmm.
The same thing, the same core values and principles that started in slave patrols are the same core values and principles in modern day policing.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It's to do everything you can to absolve white people in any crime, try to get them out of it, and be extremely heavy-handed against Black people.
Mm-hmm.
It's the same thing. I mean, you know, because the slave patrols, their job was to go catch runaway slaves.
Right.
By any means necessary.
Mm.
Modern day policing is to go out and arrest as many Black folk as you can by any means necessary. So if you got to kill a few, okay, we're going to get you off. You're going to get off. We're going to falsify police reports. We're going to try to cover things up. I mean, you know, as in, let's go back to Chicago and Rahm Emanuel, when he tried to cover up the death of and police killing of Laquan McDonald.
Mm.
I mean, it goes hand in hand. I mean, you know what I'm saying? So again, what policing came from, again, slave patrols, it's no different now in 2022 when it comes to modern day policing. It's the same concept.
Well, I'll tell you what, I'm really hoping that this mayor in New York really comes through for New York.
Oh, no,
I like
no,
what
no,
he's
no,
saying.
No, excuse me, what? Okay, okay, go ahead and say what you were going to say.
Yeah, I like what he's saying about the police department needs to be revamped. You need to bring in more people from social services, people who can help others with mental disabilities, because a lot of times when cops are called to the scene, there are issues where the person in question has a mental illness. Mm-hmm. Cops are not equipped to handle people with mental illnesses. Their training teaches them as that person being a threat, and to minimize the threat. And the thing is, you're going about it all wrong. You need someone with a social service or a psychiatric background who can come in and talk to that person and use their skills to de-escalate the situation so that everybody goes home alive and not go in guns blazing because this man's talking crazy and he's butt naked running around, so he's a threat. No, the man has a mental illness. He needs to be mm-hmm. dealt with as such. He doesn't mm-hmm. need to be locked away and thrown into Rikers Island. That's not the help he needs. Mm-hmm. He mm-hmm. needs to be de-escalated by someone with professional experience, brought in safely, and then given the correct treatment that he needs so that he can mm-hmm. go on and possibly live a normal as possible life. That's what I'm saying, Pete.
Okay. Yeah. And I get all that, but you need to really read go deeper into the new mayor of New York City.
I know he's
these past statements he's made over probably the past 3 weeks,
mm-hmm.
it's status quo. It's no different. I mean, he wants to increase he wants to go back to stop and frisk. He wants to he is he's a police officer through and through. Mm. And the things that, and I mean, and I get what you're saying.
Well, I liked that part. What he
That's what I'm getting to say. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Now that part, I mean, if you, whatever you gleaned from that part, if that's what you like, cool.
But and I'm saying I'm hoping. Yeah. That's why I said I hope he follows through with that. But go ahead.
But yeah, his track record is showing that it's everything is pro police. Everything is, you know, getting their police budget bigger. Everything is going towards going back to how it used to be, where police ran roughshod over.
And when
New
Governor
York City,
what's his name, was in place, the billionaire, who had to stop and frisk. What's his name? For president.
No, that was Giuliani. Giuliani started the stop. So he's trying to go back to those days.
Mm-hmm.
But that's another story for a different day. We can have a podcast on him next week. But again, like you were saying, Chad, and I want to push back a little bit on mm-hmm. what you were saying about the mental health aspect in the police.
Mm-hmm.
There, you are a threat. Mental health is no question when it comes to Black folk. When it comes to the police. They don't. Mm-hmm. When it's people that don't look like us, they get a lot longer string to act mm-hmm. crazy if they haven't a mental episode.
Mm-hmm.
The countless videos we've seen of white folk chasing cops with knives,
beating up cops,
and all this other
still
stuff
brought in alive.
Yeah, and then, like you said, the Black man that was running around naked in the neighborhood who didn't mm-hmm. have a weapon. He was having a mental episode, and I think it was his mother or sister was telling the police.
Yeah, that was here in Georgia. Yeah, because he was an ex-military. He was a decorated soldier. Yeah.
Yeah, and he was having mm-hmm. a mental crisis.
Yep.
And yet and still, he was a threat after being told
mm-hmm.
that he was having a mental breakdown. He didn't have a weapon,
mm-mm.
but yet, see, that's what I'm saying. Mm-hmm. It's different. It's different when police are dealing with Black folk, whether it's a mental crisis or not, and when they're dealing with non-Black people.
Indeed.
So again, it's nice to say that. It's that's cool to make that little statement. But
that's why I said I hope he comes through.
But yeah. It's been ingrained in the police. It's been ingrained that this is how you treat Black folk.
Well, I'm hoping the people around him in his cabinet will check him and be like, look,
we can't
go back to that.
Let me go ahead and stop you there, because probably the majority of the people in his camp are yes men and yes women who want to keep their job and probably extremely pro police people. So again,
wishful thinking, brother. Wishful thinking.
Yeah, I feel you, dog. I feel you totally. But Yeah, I don't see that situation getting better. But again, back to our original topic, seeing the justice for Ahmaud Arbery was like you said earlier, extremely refreshing, extremely refreshing.
Indeed, indeed. All right, well, let's hightail it into the second part of this podcast. We're talking about the voters' rights, and that's a huge topic right now. There is there's a conflict because you've got people who they want it to pass, but they want it to be involvement on both sides of the party in within both parties, and then you have others, and I'll put myself in the others category where, you know, you've tried working with the other side. They don't want to budge, period. They don't. And sometimes you just have to move forward without them. I mean, my understanding is this is an executive order that can be signed and bam, it's done. And I don't understand why after so long that President Biden is not budging. This is the thing that's ticking me off about him. And because for me as a black man, first off, it's conflicting because in one half, you know, you want to call us U.S. citizens. And I'm not saying Biden said this specifically, but I'm just saying in general, because we were born into America, we are naturalized citizens. Right. So why is it that it's only us whose rights, voters' rights, have to be approved every 20 to 25 years? You got other people that move over here from other countries. They go through the maturation process legally. They become U.S. citizens. They don't ever have to worry about their voting rights again. It's only us. And I think that should be abolished. We shouldn't have our rights should not have to be up for approval every every 20 to 25 years. That's not a citizen. That's somebody like, you know, if you just got out of jail or something. We're supposed to be citizens. And when he came, he is in President Biden, when he came to Atlanta to speak, there were a lot of what do you call it? When they're picketing protests. Thank you. There were a lot of protests with black folks because. And I agree with them because we're tired of the talk. We don't need you to fly down here and give us a pep talk, a speech. If it were up to us, that rule would have been abolished eons ago. This is your time to shine. This is where you get to put a feather in your hat as far as being a good president and being on the right side of history. But you won't budge on it because you want to make it a bipartisan effort. When time and time again, the other side has been consistent on letting you know we're not budging. We're not budging. And for those of us U.S. citizens that are Republican and that are black, you really need to pay attention to this. This is what they think about us. They don't think enough about us to say, you know what? This is ludicrous. They shouldn't have to have their rights approved every 25. Let's get rid of this. You know what I'm saying? Let's get rid of this. But they're not budging. And then you have a president that won't budge because he's so hell-bent on trying to make it bipartisan that he's really losing faith with the people that got him in there. Now, he made it known on the night that he got elected who put him in the White House. But at the same token, you're not bold enough to make the move to show us that, you know what, I agree and I'm standing with you. And if they don't want to help me do this, then I'm going to do it.
I laugh and I chuckle and I'm going to give a deep sigh before I jump on this. You said something earlier when we were talking about Ahmaud Arbery. And it goes right into this. And it's the same thing. It's the good old boy network, dog. He's not going to step out of line with his own. Are you kidding me? When push come to shove, when rubber meet the road? No. I don't care if you got a black female vice president, that don't mean nothing to me. It's really simple. When it comes to Black folk and when it comes to Black folk getting justice, or when it comes to Black folk getting bills passed, or when it comes or bills being passed specifically for Black people.
Right.
It's not gonna happen. See, because first of all, you have we already know about.
But we have an anti-Asian hate law. And that happened within a matter of months.
We have a group, the Republicans, we already know where they're coming from. We can already pay
the Japanese for imprisoning them back when they were building the when we had them in those camps.
Yeah.
And the Jews for the Holocaust. Didn't even happen over here, but we can pay them money. I can keep going, Pete, but I didn't mean to interrupt.
But no, because the things that you're saying are the things that I'm talking about. When it comes to justice and when it comes to things being done for Black people, it's not going to get done because they're going to use the bipartisan thing, knowing that Republicans have already told you what they're going to do. And then you have Kristen Sinema and old boy from West Virginia,
Manchin,
who is halting the progress of the Voting Rights Act, brought to you by the late, great John Lewis. They're holding it up when they can easily get rid of the filibuster and vote, get the 50 votes that they need, because they have 50 votes with Vice President Harris. That's the 50 votes that they need, and we can pass voting rights legislation. But again, this voting rights legislation will help Black people. And God forbid that this government would ever help Black people on any level. So again, he's trying to kick the can down the road instead of being who he said he was going to be when running to try to get black people's votes. He is showing his true colors. I mean, Joe Biden is who he is. I'm not going to sit up here and say he whatever. But when a person will always tell you who they are in moments of crisis, and he's telling us who he really is.
Right.
Now, remind you, let's go back. This is the writer of the crime bill. This who this person is. He is one of the main architects of the 94 crime bill. So this is who he is when it comes to Black folk. And now all of a sudden, you can do everything for everybody else. You can write executive orders for everybody else. But now all of a sudden, you want to have bipartisanship when it comes to voting rights. And again, these voting rights will mainly help Black folk because, again, the Republicans are gerrymandering districts. They are making it harder for Black people to vote. I mean, in Black majority Black counties, especially like in places like Texas, and I know it's states all over, this country that have these rules where a county where it's majority Black folk, they have one place that they can go vote. In a whole county, one place, no drop boxes, no none of that. You got this high school that your whole county has to go to to vote. You see what I'm saying? It's stuff like that, and redistricting and all this other stuff. And again, this is hurting Black people,
right?
So again, he's not going to go out of his way. We've already given him what he wanted. That was the White House. We gave him what he wanted. So at this stage, what are you going to do now? You can't take me. You can't get rid of me. You can't get me out of the White House.
Right.
You see what I'm saying? So why would he? He's shown us who he is. So he's not going to go out of his way. He's going to use bipartisanship to kick the can down the road because he doesn't want to make that decision.
Right.
He doesn't want to be the one to step outside of his people.
Mm-hmm. Break his code. Clique.
Yeah, he don't. There you go.
Mm-hmm.
He doesn't want to break code. Because at the end of the day, he's going to stand with his own above all else. He's going to stand with his own. And it's that simple. And then you're allowing two people that's basically senators of 3% of the population, if that, hold up your whole agenda. Two people. So you won't attack them. You won't go after them as the president of the United States. You won't go fly to Arizona or West Virginia and let the people know that your senator is the one that's holding up progress for your state.
Mm-hmm.
The things that I'm trying to put forward that's going to help your state, help your poor, help your children, help the elderly, bring jobs to your city. He won't do that because that'll break code. Because I guarantee you, if it was Reverend Warnock,
mm-hmm.
he would be in Atlanta right now telling the people of Georgia, it's Reverend Warnock that's holding my bill up.
He sure would. Yep, that's a good point.
You see what I'm saying? Because it's easier to do that for him. I can go challenge Reverend Warnock, this black man. I can go challenge him because it looks good in my circles.
Mm-hmm. Really good optics.
Yeah, it looks good in my circle. But he's not going to go against his own. No, we need to get together and be bipartisan, not get rid of the filibuster. Come on, man, stop. We know what this is. We know what this is. So stop. I mean, it's just crazy to me that as a people, we're still waiting for folk that don't look like us to help us. It's never happened.
Mm-hmm.
And it's never going to happen. Chad, we are still trying to get an anti-lynching bill
right.
passed.
And it's 2022.
It's 2022 and we do not have an anti-lynching bill. They've been trying to get an anti-lynching bill passed since the 60s.
And Joe Manchin won't touch it. He's the key to that one, too.
We already know what the Republicans going to do. And you got people in your own party that's voting against an anti-lynching bill. Are you kidding me? So again, I mean, this is par for the course for this country when it comes to people that look like us. It is.
Hmm.
I mean, we just got to be 100 on it. We just got to talk brass tacks and be 100 on it.
Mm-hmm.
This is what it is. This is what we've been living through since 1619. Slavery, Jim Crow, Reconstruction.
Redlining. Yeah.
But we still not only survived, thrived, we are still an integral part of this country because if something happens to us, this country falls apart, period.
Yeah, we influence everything and we only make up, what, 14% of the population?
Yeah. But yeah, between 12 and 14% of the population. And everything revolves and moves with us. So again, it's not surprising that Biden's not going out of his way to, you know, push voter. He's giving little speeches, but he's not doing anything tangible.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And anybody can give a speech.
Nothing has no meat on the bone.
But what are you doing that's tangible?
Right. Something that's pushing that needle.
Yeah, something that I can touch. Something that I can see. My 8-year-old granddaughter can give a speech. But that don't mean it's tangible. You see what I'm saying? Right.
Yeah, he jumps on that build back better and building better bridges and transportation system. Oh, he's on that all day. He gonna make that happen.
Yeah. And then we can't leave out Madam Vice President.
That's a disappointment.
I mean, where I haven't seen. I mean,
nothing. I thought about other VPs, and I'm like, but it doesn't matter. She's not other VPs. She's Kamala. You had a voice when you were on the campaign. You had a voice when you were running. Now all of a sudden you're mute.
And it's not, Chad, it's not the simple fact. It's not that I'm not saying that she's mute or she's not doing stuff behind the scenes.
She has an identity, Pete. I mean,
I don't know. But what are you doing? And I know people are going to say, you know, well, other vice presidents didn't do X, Y, and Z, and they didn't do yada, yada, yada.
They didn't look like us. They didn't look like this. We're holding Kamala to a higher standard because people in that position are usually not us. So when you get there, we're really expecting. It's just like when Obama became president. We all fell the hell to sleep because we were so happy he was in office. But we forgot to hold him accountable for what he was supposed to do. And then it hits us, but it's far too late. You know, he did his 8 and he's out. And now we're sitting here left holding the bag like, wait a minute. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. We fell asleep on him.
You did something for everybody but us.
We were late to the party, man. By the time we realized that he did his 8 and he was out. I mean, the funny thing is, and I know we're jumping off topic for a second, but the funny thing is his last term, when he got elected again, the second term, I'm like, okay, now he can really pull out all the stops because he can't get reelected. Come on, come through. So now I'm looking at Kamala like, you had this voice, you had these points that you were talking to, but now that you're in the office, it's like, I don't see you doing nothing. I don't see anything. At least have one or two things like, hey, I'm going to focus on getting money back to the HBCUs, or I'm going to focus on
voting rights.
Get out here and get the ball rolling on the voters' rights or HBCU funding or reparations. I know that's a far cry, but I'm just saying.
Yeah.
Come on, give us something that we know you're fighting for. And I'm not saying you got to fight only for us, but there's got to be something in there for us.
Yeah, not gonna happen. Because again, it's about once you're in a position like that and you're Black, you're gonna basically be stripped of anything that you can do because again, you don't wanna go overboard about
your Blackness.
Looking like you helping Black folk. Yeah. And you are too Black for the job. You can't do that.
Yeah. All that gets stripped when you get those positions. You cannot be a Black VP. You have to be a VP.
Yeah.
President Obama made that very clear.
I mean,
I'm not a president of white America. I'm not a president of Black America. I'm a president of the United States of America.
And that's fine. And we get it. We understand the pressure that you're under. We understand the pressure of, you know, you can't be too Black, or you can't be the angry Black man, or you see what I'm saying? You can't do, I mean, because, bro, they lost their stuff over you wearing a tan suit when Ronald Reagan wore tan suits and George Bush wore tan suits.
Or First Lady out there with her arms out and she flies out, get out, and they mad because she's showing her. I said, y'all hating. Because y'all got all that back flap.
Exactly. So again, we understand the pressure of you not trying to be overly Black. Mm-hmm. And your agenda the agendas that you want to get pushed forward are not going to be pushed forward because if you act overly Black, because
you're gonna lose ratings.
Yeah, because the voters. People then in legislation make laws. So, and they don't, a lot of them don't, the majority of them don't look like you. So mm-hmm. You can't be overly Black. I get it. I understand that. But give us something. At least play the part of trying to do something for your people.
But you know what, Pete, you can have a lot of rifles playing devil's advocate. Why do you want Obama to give y'all something? Why don't y'all just, you know, do what you need to do, pull yourself up by your own bootstraps? And my thing is, when you are born into America as a white person, you are automatically afforded opportunities and rights that non-whites just do not have. You're afforded rights, opportunities, connections, just because of the color of your skin, and you don't even realize it.
Yep.
You're afforded the ability of giving a, what do you call it? Giving a benefit of a doubt.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You are afforded grace and patience.
Mm-hmm.
If you act out, if you do something you ain't supposed to do. You are afforded opportunities time and time again to correct yourself. A lot of times. That black folks don't even get.
Mm-hmm.
So when we ask for something,
mm-hmm.
it's because we're not trying to be better than y'all. We just want to level the playing field, because we know if we level the playing field,
mm-hmm.
it ain't gonna be nice.
Ooh. Ooh.
And you know it's not gonna be nice. That's why all of this crap is put into place to keep us at a certain level.
Mm-hmm.
The Jim Crow, the redlining,
the
discrimination. What'd you say?
I said slavery,
racism. Yeah, racism, yeah, all of that is put into place because heaven forbid we all, regardless of our color, get the same level playing field.
Mm-hmm.
Heaven forbid.
Mm-hmm. But again, Chad, I mean, you know, speaking, going back to the voting rights issue, nothing's going to be done about voting rights. And I mean, I hate to be so pessimistic about it, but I mean, let's look back at anything that will help black people, and has it ever gotten passed?
Reparations?
Nope. anti-lynching. We just don't want people to hang us. That's all we ask.
That's all we ask it.
Just don't hang us from a tree. we just don't hang us from a tree. That's all we ask. Just don't hang us. Period. And we can't get that.
Right.
We can't get a law put into practice.
Make it plain, Pastor.
That will not allow us to be hung from a tree. Chad, come on.
Somebody,
and now you think this. Now you think voting rights is gonna happen?
Mm. I like the way you put that.
You see what I'm saying? Yeah, you mm-hmm. see what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
We can't get the simplest right of people. Don't hang us. Don't put a rope around our neck and hang us from. We can't get that as a people. And we think we're gonna get some voting rights. I'm just saying, Chad. I mean, anything can happen. Anything can happen. And I mean, I hope something happens and something breaks through. And again, let's get back to the filibuster. The rule, not a law, a rule that was used to keep slavery. That's where the filibuster came from. Those states could keep slavery. And so we're still using that as a way to block laws to be implemented, in most cases, to help black people. We're using the same law from whenever the filibuster was created, 17-something, whatever it is. We still using that same, it ain't even a law, it's a rule that can be changed. We just got rid of the filibuster to raise the debt ceiling. They got rid of the filibuster for that. Manchin voted for that. Sinema voted so we can get more money to the country, so we won't fall into bankruptcy as a country. They got rid of the filibuster for that, to make it 51 votes. But you can't get rid of the filibuster for the Voting Rights Act, or you can't get rid of the filibuster for the anti-lynching law. I'm just saying, Chad.
Yeah, I'm tapped out. I ain't got nothing else.
I'm just saying, bro. I'm telling you. And that's what the tools that are used So people that look like us don't get the things that we deserve as far as laws are concerned. Laws are being passed. They'll fall back on the filibuster and they'll fall back on bipartisanship. But when, like I said, when it was time to raise the debt ceiling so our country won't fall into bankruptcy, all the senators voted to get rid of the filibuster. All the Republicans did in the Senate. Everybody, all the Democrats in the Senate voted to get rid of the filibuster just to raise the debt ceiling. But now all of a sudden, you don't want to get rid of the rule of the filibuster. Okay.
Yeah.
All right, then.
Let's move on.
Yeah, buddy.
That's a whole nother podcast. All right, let's move on to our Black History piece for this segment. And today I want to introduce you all to a sister by the name of Dr. Shirley Ann Jackson, telecommunications research. Let's see here. Dr. Shirley Ann Jackson, a theoretical physicist and famous Black inventor, has been credited with making many, many advances in science. She first developed an interest in science and mathematics during her childhood and conducted experiments and studies such as those on eating habits of honeybees. She followed this interest to the Massachusetts Institute of Technology, MIT, where she received a bachelor's and a doctoral degree, all in the field of physics. In doing so, she became the first African-American woman to earn a PhD from MIT. Jackson conducted successful experiments in theoretical physics and used her knowledge of physics to foster advances in telecommunications research while working at Bell Laboratories. Dr. Jackson conducted breakthrough basic scientific research that enabled others to invent the portable fax, touch-tone telephone, solar cells, fiber optic cables, and the technology behind caller ID and call waiting. Currently, Jackson is the president of Rensselaer Polytechnic Institute, the oldest technological research university in the United States, and recently ranked by the U.S. News and World Report as one of the nation's top 50 universities.
Wow.
The mission of Rensselaer, and that's R-E-N-S-S-E-L-A-E-R, that's the name of the university. The mission of Rensselaer since its founding in 1824 has been to apply science to the common purposes of life. Dr. Jackson's goal for Rensselaer is to achieve prominence in the 21st century as a top-tier, world-class technological research university with global reach and global impact. Again, I give you Dr. Shirley Jackson.
Oof. We are great. We are a great people, boy. Good gracious.
She is the reason. She laid the foundation so that others could invent the portable fax, the touch-tone telephone, solar cells, which is huge now because now you have solar panels for energy and little, portable lights that charge by solar. Your phone can now charge by solar. So she is the reason for all of that, along with fiber optic cables that people run for, you know, internet usage and high data traffic.
Mm-hmm.
And most importantly, the technology behind caller ID and caller waiting.
Ooh, boy, when caller ID came out back then. Boy,
she know we needed that.
Yeah, because you know them bill collectors, boy, be calling.
I can see you calling. Oh, no.
Yeah, I know that. No, I'm not answering that. I don't know that number.
Right.
Mm-mm, buddy. Mm-mm.
Thank you, Shirley. Dr. Shirley.
I know that's right.
Pete, what's up with the book of the week, man? You got one?
Yes, sir. The book of the week is 400 Souls by Ibram X. Kendi and Keisha Blaine. And basically, this book is a like 80 authors and 10 poets. What they basically do, they write a memoir. Well, not really a memoir, but in 5-year increments, each one of them breaks down the Black experience in 5-year increments from 1619 to 2019.
Okay.
So these 80 writers and these 10 poets basically write a synopsis in 5-year increments from 1619 to 2019 on, like I said, the African experience.
Mm-hmm.
Very, very, very important read. If you want to know anything about our culture, our people, it's extremely thought-provoking. It's just, it's a very deep book, and it's a very important book.
What's the name of it again?
It's called 400 Souls.
Okay.
So, and like I said, each one of these writers and each one of these poets break down the Black experience from 1619, when our ancestors touched this land called America, until 2019.
Mm-hmm.
And so again, it's a phenomenal book. And I implore all of our viewers and listeners to pick up a copy of this book. Again, 400 Souls by Ibram X. Kendi and Keisha N. Blaine. 400 souls. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Indeed. Indeed, indeed, indeed. All right. Moving on to the Bible verse or verses of the week. I come to you from the book of Ephesians, chapter 6, verses 10 through 18. Finally, be strong in the Lord and in his mighty power. Put on the full armor of God so that you can take your stand against the devil's schemes. For our struggle is not against the flesh and blood, but against the rulers, against the authorities, against the powers of this dark world, and against the spiritual forces of evil in the heavenly realms. Therefore, put on the full armor of God so that when the day of evil comes, you may be able to stand your ground. And after you have done everything, like Donnie said, to stand.
Mm.
Stand firm then with the belt of truth buckled around your waist, with the breastplate of righteousness in place, and with your feet fitted with the readiness that comes from the gospel of peace. And in addition to all this, take up the shield of faith with which you can extinguish all the flaming arrows of the evil one. Take the helmet of salvation and the sword of the Spirit, which is the word of God. And pray in the Spirit on all occasions with all kinds of prayers and requests. With this in mind, be alert and always keep on praying for all the Lord's people. Ephesians chapter 6, verses 10 through 18.
There it is.
Pete, anything else, man? Any comments, concerns you want to leave with the people before we get out of here?
I think the one thing that I always say is, you know, protect yourself, protect your family, and protect your people. One thing I want to add to that is, do for your people.
Mm.
Do for your people. Find something that will help your people. Whatever it is, it can be great, it can be small. But as Black folk, we have got to get to the mindset that we have to do for each other. We have to do for each other. And that's what makes us grow as a people, as in strength as a people. Once we get the concept of being able to do for one another, not look at somebody with jealous eyes or want what they have or this, that, and the third. When we get to the mindset of doing for each other, We take a people that's already chosen and great and make them greater.
Mm-hmm. I like that.
Yeah.
I like that.
Yeah. I've been thinking about that quite a bit, man. It's just we're at the stage now as a people that we see what's going on. We see what's going on. We see that things that's going on in this world is not conducive in a way to help us. You see what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
And at some point we have to be strong enough as a people to be like, look, okay, we see what's going on. We have to help each other. We have to build within ourselves.
You're right.
I agree.
And before we get out of here, people, I have to leave you with Marcus Garvey. Never forget that intelligence rules the world and ignorance carries the burden. Therefore, remove yourself as far as possible from ignorance and seek as far as possible to be intelligent.
Brother Marcus Garvey, there it is. There it is.
Ladies and gentlemen, thank you so much for tuning in to another edition of Our Voice 360, Our Perspectives, Our Ways. Be blessed, be safe, and we out.
Peace.